Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
You're John Chespigon.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, I'm Ramin Karimloo, and welcome to my podcast, The Hang, where I get to hang out with some of my friends and get some much-needed face-to-face time and talk about, well, whatever. Hey folks, welcome back to part two of my hang with my great friend Simon Bailey. Let's dive right back in where we left off, talking about Teatro, Theaterland's fastest-selling gold status supergroup that Simon was a founding member of. You guys recorded the album quickly, right?
It was quick, yeah. I mean, the whole turnaround was super fast. I mean, because I remember...
Was it one of those things where did you all four go live in one place together?
Or
was
no. It- no, we all lived in London. So that was, well, they flew Jeremiah over and Jeremiah obviously stayed in London. So we're all around. I had found a place, weirdly, which was 30 seconds away from Sony headquarters. And I was living there. And it was fast. So they took a long time to kind of, I think, choose people. I can't remember that. It was, anyway. And then it took a long time to work out the deal of it all. And, you know, and then, because we knew we were the four.
And at that point, was all four separate agents, acting agents, cutting the deal?
Yeah. So, of course, we didn't drop acting agents because they were the ones who, well, we wouldn't anyway, but they were the ones who set it up. And so they were working then with Jonathan Shalit. So everyone was kind of working together.
So Jonathan Shalit acts as the band's music manager.
That's right. So he was kind of in charge.
It
was
so your agents had to liaise with Jonathan Shalit.
That's right.
There's the holdup.
There you go. And it took a long time to work out everyone's deals. And, you know, we had to meet with, you know.
But also Jonathan's fighting on your behalf to the label.
Well, that's it. Yeah. So... I mean, it took such a long time because you got four individuals acting as a band because we weren't quite a band yet because we hadn't been together yet, but we were still four individuals fighting for what we wanted. And of course, some things would come in and we were like, well, no, that doesn't really quite work with this. It would go two and four. And I think it took about 2.5 months for this deal to get done. And then finally, we got this email through saying, you have this 5-album deal with Sony. And we were just like, oh my God. Wow. It was crazy because... This was where my Phantom story is amazing because I had just been offered Raoul that year and I was offered Teatro at the same time. I'd left, I just finished playing Honduras and I'd been offered Raoul, but I was also offered Teatro at the same time. And I just had to, it was like one of those really like amazing but difficult decisions. I was like, well, I have to do this. I have to do this, you know, and I was going, oh, but I really want to do Phantom as well. And it was, so it was nuts. So after Teatro finished, you know, we kind of rang back to Phantom. It was like, well, you know, Simon's available now. If you still want to see him, they're like, yeah, absolutely. And so I went into the casting, into the audition. And I literally said, as I walked in, I said, thank you so much for considering me again, because obviously what happened last year, I said it was something that I just really had to do. And they were like, we're just glad you came back. It was so lovely. And from that point, it was, you know, I just knew that was going to be one of those jobs. We like, and when you start like that, how can it possibly go wrong?
So you all toured?
Sort of, no. It didn't really.
I remember you doing some big old
We
concerts.
Did some big stuff. So we did Proms in the Park at Hyde Park, and we did this one called Stars of Europe, which was in Brussels, which we did. It was like 45,000 people. It was crazy. Like, so some of the most amazing experiences with the Raw Variety performance. So with some of the, I mean, some of these amazing life memories, which, you know, I will forever remember. You know, I got a gold album, which now hangs on my wall at home. And, wow. You know, these things, which when you grow up and you just think, well, what would you like to achieve? I'd like to have something like that. But that'll never happen, you know.
It's amazing that you have a gold album, yet you would think that would propel to more success. But in the record industry, it's so hard.
So hard. And I think what happened was, because we... We reached gold status really quickly. I think it was in like 2.5 weeks or something. It was so fast.
Which is unheard of, unless unheard you're Adele. Of.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was, and I think it was one of those things. Someone said we were the fastest of that type, like musical theater. We were the fastest musical theater.
Does that happen nowadays?
I don't know. I mean, I suppose it's pretty different now with streaming and with all that stuff. But
that's what I feel went against you. You guys... Even though you went gold, it came at a weird time.
Where it was in the middle.
Everything was changing.
Everything was changing. Well, this was the thing. When we met with our music lawyers, you know, we didn't know anything about it. And he was like, he said, well, look, your money won't come, your own personal money won't come from album sales.
No.
And I was like, but surely that's the main. I didn't know anything. And he said, look, now it's all about streaming and it's about this. And at that point, I was like, I thought that was water. What the I didn't know what that was, really. And he was like, forget that. It doesn't matter how many. You could sell 15 million albums. You'll probably see about 25 quid. I was like, what? He said, it's going to come from the touring side of it. So we're going to make it. Our deal was kind of based really around touring and merchandise and all things like that. But it was nothing to do with album sales. But still, we were presented with this gold album live on a TV show, which we didn't expect because we didn't even know we'd gone gold. And they had Sony, you know, which was lovely of them, had four, like, you know, those really cool, like, frame things. They had those frames made up for us with our names, all individual names.
Fair play.
Which was such a nice thing to do because they didn't have to do that. But then from then, it just, something just happened and it just didn't click and we didn't get as high in the charts as it was expected. And that was the end.
And was there an official, like, it's done, guys, doors closed, or we're closing shop?
It was kind of brutal, yeah.
I bet.
Yeah, it was. Well, I just got, and it was, I'll never forget it. It was probably about a week or two before Christmas. Oh. It was like 2007.
And at that point, how long had Teatro been?
Like thing? 6 months. 6 months.
Holy shit.
Oh, mate.
You went from nothing to gold to closing doors
nothing
all in 6 months?
Nothing to gold. To doing the Raw Variety performance in October to in front of 6.2 million people that saw it to within 7 weeks of that, hey guys, this is your last paycheck. Thanks very much.
Why? At that point, the trajectory was still on
it
the
just,
up, right?
Yeah, whatever happened, I think it just, musical theater fans bought it and then it just kind of, and then of course we had, because we were up against like Il Divo and things like that. And there was a thing, there was stuff in that happened.
There's got to be politics involved because.
There is. But yeah.
If you said to me 18 months, okay. But 6 months, you just got presented gold.
Yeah. Still it was crazy because on the table we had this 5-album deal. We were told how much that deal was worth or how much they'd spent in that. And all of our suits were from Dolce & Gabbana and they were this. And I was like, it was literally a dream. You know, we were flying to different countries. They flew us to Bucharest to go and film our music video. And then that music video wasn't quite right. So like, we're going to film.
Bucharest, man.
We're
going to capital of music theater world.
Brilliant. They love it. No.
See. Where is it?
I don't know. No, so Bucharest is next to Budapest.
Okay.
Yeah. And You know, you know.
Yeah.
That's fine. I don't have to.
Lots of people go out there to record.
They do a lot. I mean, a lot of filming.
Prague?
Yeah. A lot of filming gets done in Bucharest. I mean, it's beautiful. I mean, that's why it's beautiful. But then we came back. They'd spent like $150,000 on that music video. We came back. They're like,
see, that's the problem.
We didn't like that. So we're going to do another one. So we did one in London. We hired this amazing boat. And we filmed it all the way down the Thames. We filmed outside City Hall. I mean, this music video is amazing, but it costs like I think like £350,000. You know, but that's,
you know,
listen, live and learn, isn't it? And
the least you spend on getting the product out, the better, man. I'd rather forego advances and just say market it.
Well, that's kind of what we did. I mean, I think people talked about they kind of said, well, do you want an advance in like a chunk? And I think we all just kind of went, oh, no, because that's kind of like a loan. And if they loan you that money and you don't recoup that money, you owe them that money. That was kind of my understanding of it. So we just said we took like a small monthly wage.
Which is smart.
Which is smart. But I mean, we still did. It wasn't something that made us.
When I look at what Sony did for my first album and I found out what they paid to make that album, I was like, remember Gorman getting into Abbey Road Studio. And look, I'm very grateful.
Yeah.
Like, what an experience.
Yeah.
But we had like a 70-piece orchestra for one of my songs.
Yeah.
It's like,
well, yeah, we had the
Royal. Work with just a guitar.
Yeah. You know? Well, we had exactly the same. We had the Royal Philharmonic play for our album. We're like, well, that's amazing. But
look, everyone did it with the best intention, you know?
I can't remember. Was it when you were in New York with Sergio? And when you were playing your noses, I kind of the nose banjo. Human bagpipes. And I was like, get him in. That'd be great. Listen.
It costs a thing.
It's something new.
A little bit of dignity, but
they haven't heard it before. So let's just create some new music. I was thinking, get Karimli on the old human bagpipes.
Yeah, bring him home. Run through the nostril.
You heard it here first, guys.
So, man, my heart sank even just hearing you say, this is your last paycheck.
Oh, man.
Band's over.
It was literally heartbreaking. I remember I...
And not because of the money. It's just
it was...
What? We just started.
Exactly. And we were all starting to gel, you know, as performers. We were just starting to understand, you know, because I think, you know, and tell me what you think about this. When you go from playing characters to being yourself on stage, it's terrifying.
It takes time, man.
And you need to learn how to talk to an audience and not be scared about doing that and being like, well, is that going to sound stupid? Is that going to... You just got to just talk.
Yeah, and you got to stop filtering yourself and stop being apologetic.
Exactly.
And be vulnerable and be imperfect.
Yeah.
Because that happens.
And exactly.
That's who you figure out how you are as an artist.
That's
which
right.
Which I still think I'm slowly figuring out. I still think there's a bit of a facade.
Yeah. But I think there has to be, doesn't there, a little bit because... I think like you just said, like when we're talking about social media, you try and keep your personal. It's the same thing really with, well, then again, I suppose, I mean, if you're writing songs which are about something, you're already giving a chunk of your heart and your thoughts to.
But then you don't need to talk about it.
It's exactly. All there. It's there. So to talk about it, I think, is more of a different thing, you know, and it's more of a difficult thing. And you also, you know, that's not.
I don't want to spoon feed what I feel they should interpret. I want them to interpret what they want to interpret.
Yeah.
You know, the audiences aren't dumb.
No.
Audiences aren't incapable of thinking for themselves. And when I'm in an audience, don't tell me how to feel.
Exactly.
Don't tell me when I'm going to cry or laugh. I'll figure that out.
Yeah.
You do you.
It's also, you know, when artists get up and they talk after every song or before every song, and I think there's sometimes you can just let, just play. And then because these are... Like you say, audiences aren't stupid. They can work things out for themselves. And that's part of the fun for them as well. I think of you've written a song. This is the song. It's called X. And then you'd play that. And they're like, oh, I wonder if that's about. And it's fun for them to go into their imagination then rather than going, this is about this. I wrote this on this. And this is about, you know, I think it's more fun for them to.
And everyone has a different starting point. I don't know what they've brought to the show as an audience member. Mm. I don't know what their day's been like.
Exactly.
You can't preempt that.
Yeah. No, of course. So I think that's all. Yeah, it's all fun to do that and to give people, paint little stories for people and they can make their own beginning and ending, but you give them the information and they can do whatever they like with it. That's why we do theatre. That's why we that's why we do what we do, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is to make people think. When you do a show, it's for people to forget for 2.5 hours. Or you can feed a song out and go, well, I wonder what that's about. And then it can make people think, or they can get it straight away, or they can wake up the next day and go, oh, I wonder if it was that. That's, you know, and yeah. Then it makes them think about something of their own experience as well. And so it can be an altogether cathartic experience, which is great.
Yeah, that is true. Where my mind is going now is like, but you can only do that if you put your damn cell phones away.
Yeah. I
don't want to make this into a rant, but no, it's so true.
It is so true. Because, of course, when you're on stage and you see yourself, like when you see the phones going up everywhere in the light, I mean, it's something that, I mean, it.
Well, you're out.
You're out. You're done. And because you can see that guy, you're like, why the fuck are you? You just put, I like, A, you've paid money to see this. B, we're working our asses off. C, the person next to you and behind you can see your fucking light. Turn it off.
And then you have some people say, well, you should be paying attention to what you're doing. I was till the fucking light went off.
Exactly.
I mean, and so was the person next to him who was now disturbed.
Well, you've got lights in your face the whole time anyway. Yeah.
Okay, I'm now beginning to think it's you with a cell phone.
But I have to go through a week of tech for that. I don't want unexpected shit in my face. I had someone, I went to go see Come From Way 2 nights ago.
How incredible is that show?
Which I loved. I absolutely loved it.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
At no point... And this is where I really was thinking, that director, Christopher Ashley, yeah. Right? Christopher Ashley? Must be. I feel embarrassed now. I'm going to Google this while we talk.
Yeah.
No, at no point did you not know who was who or where they were. Just by a simple turn of a chair, a hat switch.
Yeah.
Oh, phenomenal.
So clever and so slick. And like you say, because a lot of people are changing characters maybe 2-3 times – and it's so fast, like you say, you never go, oh, I'm lost. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Everything is so clear. I mean, you had some great actors. I went to go primarily because I wanted to go see David Thaxton because, you know, Thaxton's a really good friend of mine. And
who's a phenomenal actor.
Phenomenal actor.
I did Love Never Dies with
him. Yeah, that's right.
Christopher Ashley. Yes.
Yeah. And I was kind of blown away by it. And I love the fact that it was all done in one act. I love the fact there was no let up. I love the fact it was, everything was there for you. You didn't have a chance to kind of breathe.
How much did you love the band taking the final bow?
Oh, loved it. I mean, but that's the kind of folky, I love that stuff. I mean, it kind of, there was, when I went to go and sit down, it kind of reminded me of Once, the setup of Once. And I was like, well, there already I'm in because I loved Once. I thought that was amazing. And it was kind of the same kind of Irish folksy rock kind of style. But it was a great play. I mean, and a great play told by great actors. And I thought it was great. I loved it. I mean, I've seen some really cool stuff. I went to go and see Dear Evan Hansen two, 3 weeks ago, which I thought was unreal.
Amazing writing, eh?
Oh, my God. Like, I mean, it was one of those, I was just like, shit, that's probably one of the best things I've ever seen. I thought it was incredible. And this guy, Sam Tutty, who plays Evan, the guy I saw play Evan.
Yeah, I saw you tweet him.
Yeah, I mean, just, I meant it because I said, I tweeted, look, if I was like 12 years old and I was getting into musical theater, I'd want to be in that show and I'd want to be that guy.
Yeah.
You know, because I remember, because what did get me to do that was when I saw Joseph for the first time. Yeah. And that's what got me into it. And I was like, I want to be that guy and I want to be in that show.
You played the Pharaoh.
When I played the Pharaoh. So when I got that part, I was like, oh my God, they're like little dreams that this is what makes our job fun and will always keep it fun and always keep it exciting is when you start to realize just little personal dreams. You know, when you get a phone call because saying you're going to play the Pharaoh, I lost my mind.
I remember you telling me this, that yeah. was your dream.
I was like, when I totally we were rehearsing lost Phantom. My mind. Yeah, I lost my mind. Yeah. And then, you know, subsequently, I get to work with Tim Rice and do. I went around to Tim Rice's house and sang Close Every Door around his piano in his house. I was like, what the? What's life, man?
Isn't he one of the nicest men?
There is no one nicer. He is the loveliest guy.
Human beings, I should say.
I mean, really. He really, really is. I mean, this is where I think I even said around that time, I got a picture. I felt embarrassed because I hate doing it, but I said, can I have a picture with you? He was like, of course you can. You know, and I left there going, they say don't ever meet your heroes unless they're Tim Rice. You know what I mean? Because when someone's that graceful with everything he's achieved, and of course, then you go, but you wrote Jesus Christ Superstar. You wrote Evita. You wrote Joseph. You wrote The Lion King. Like, you go, this is, and you would never know that to talk to you.
Nonstop.
Yeah.
How many hits, man? This guy is like
a factory.
The Midas touch.
It's crazy.
So this year's been trying for you.
Trying, yeah.
But right now, this is your first time you've finally put a name to deed.
Yeah. That's it. So out of something tragic comes, you know, you have to always look at positives. And that's what this year's been really about. You know, I think when you especially now having like lost both parents now, and you know, I'm not going to try and bum everyone out, but it becomes, you have to start again, basically. You have to kind of, and it's made me realize who I am more than I ever realized before, you know, without question, and what makes me happy and what doesn't, and what you're willing to put up with and what you're not, and life's too short, basically.
100%.
Yeah, and so, yeah, so now I have this place, and it's amazing. I love it.
So you bought a place.
Bought a place, yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks very much. Yeah, and I'm now loving things that everyone always used to tell me I always used to find boring. Like, I had new carpets put in the other day, and I was giddy. I had a boiler put in.
I know.
And I did a little dance. I was like, what are you?
Have you looked into crockery yet? What sort of Tupperware one might get for the cupboards?
The crystalware is on order.
How much have you been on Amazon?
Quite a lot. I've been on Amazon quite a lot. I have been looking at all of those places. I've started to look at building my own sofa and like all stupid things.
What do you mean building your own sofa?
You don't
have to do that. There's places that have sofas already built.
Well, yeah, I was. Oh man, I've been looking in the wrong places. I got redirected.
I see you with like cloth and like sewing kits and hammers. Like what?
Just like hammering some fabric into the floor and going, that looks all right. That's fine.
So what do you, is it a flat or a house?
Yeah, it's a flat. One bedroom flat. And the location of it is insane because I can get anywhere in like 20 minutes. It's just, I just love it. I'm just absolutely in love with it. You know, now my sister's looking at doing the same thing. So I'm helping her with that and all that business. So, you know, it's been like a strange year in a lot of ways. You know, but also, you know, whenever I walk into that flat now, I literally smile and say thank you to them. So it's, yeah.
And you seem, I feel, even through your Twitter, because I feel like it oozes a lot of like who you are and the connections you have and relationships you have.
Mm-hmm.
How important have those relationships have been over the last year?
Yeah. I mean, it's so much. I mean, you know, it's people who took the time to message and, you know, and just kind of just show that they care and they're thinking about you and stuff. It's, you know, because it's like it was the worst possible thing. It was crazy. I remember because I was on tour, and this goes to show how deep family connection can be, because remember, I was on tour. I was in Bristol, and it was the morning of. Halloween. Great. And I woke up, and I remember I woke up at about 8 o'clock in the morning. We had two shows that day, and I just felt awful. And I was like, no, I need to sleep again because something's not right. And I woke back up again at about 11:30. I was sat on my bed and I was sharing a house with two other people. And one of the guys came out and he was like, are you okay? And I was like, no, something feels wrong. He was like, it's a two show day. You just can't be asked or whatever it was. I said, no, something just feels wrong. Like I had this cloud around my head. It was strange. And I just thought, fucking man up, just get on with it. And we were walking to work and, I was lagging behind these two and they were like, what is wrong with you? I was like, I don't know. Something's really weird. And then 10 minutes later, I had the phone call from my sister saying, you know, it's mum, come home. And of course I lost my mind, but then I thought back and then we kind of worked out the time that it probably happened was 8 o'clock in the morning. And I woke up and I was like, I don't want to be awake. I need to go back to sleep. And it was strange. I knew nothing. And I was still like, something's wrong. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong. Like I didn't feel ill. I just knew something was wrong, you know, and that's what it was.
Was it a surprise in the sense of she was fine leading up to that point?
She wasn't fine. But the time frame was certainly a surprise. Yeah. So it was a shock. And it was strange because it was the same situation as with my dad. You know, I just got a phone call going, sorry. And I was like, what? It was just, you know, like bang, the lights went out, you know.
I remember the ink you got.
Yeah. Well, that's it. You know, the ink that's on the arm. Do not go gently into that good night. And then the one on my arm as well, the goodbye, you know, all that stuff. Yeah. Of course, you know, so these are always nice. These are nice reminders of our friendship because that's when we were out in Malaysia, wasn't it? And you went, let's go and get tattoos. I was like, yeah, that's sharp.
To this day, and I tell this story to friends, if we'd start talking about ink and whatnot. Yeah. I remember you sat in a chair, your legs, one leg is crossed, you know, it's as Eddie's working on your arm. And I think, you know, once you get past that first bit and you think, okay, this is what's going to be like now for the next couple hours, you must have shifted. As I came in, you shifted, but while Eddie was mid-ink.
Yeah.
And I remember and it stopped and he went, you fucking idiot, you moved. And you went, is that bad? So he had to sort it out and obviously it's fine.
Yeah.
But I remember in the evening before the show, I walk in a room and you're just silently looking at your ink and there's a bit of like a red rash coming up. And then you went, hey man, is this bad? I looked down and all I see is red and I couldn't process it quick enough because I'm just like, is it? I'm thinking to myself, well,
I
didn't get no red rash. And you just kept staring at me. And after a good, like, what felt like ages, it probably was 5 seconds, but felt like 30. You're not saying anything.
Say anything. Say something.
This is where you're supposed to reassure me. I said, I really don't know.
You had like one of those, it was like your face, like those that emoji with the eyes, which is like so wide. I was like, am I going to die? Is this it?
I think my first reaction, all I could say was, well, why'd you move?
Yeah, I was scared. But yeah, so it was a nice reminder. I mean, those are great trips as well. You, me, Steve out in Malaysia. I mean, I loved going out there, man. That was...
Could not stop laughing.
Yeah, that
the
was
things
just...
things we would do live on air for interviews.
Stupid.
Bunch of children.
Yeah, like literally a bunch of children.
As I'm speaking to the morning television host.
Yeah.
Under the table, either you or Steven's trying to press their heel into my toes as hard as possible, mid-sentence, and I just have to keep my eyes on the prize.
Life.
Just answer the question. Life. I'll get them back.
Yeah. And then I remember, do you remember there was also that time in Greece? Do you remember? We were in Athens, and we'd over there to that thing, and there was this one TV studio we were in. Well, we were just about to sing, and all of us, it was like December time. Mm-hmm. So all of us were kind of struggling a bit because the cold was kicking in. And there was this, the girl who was the TV host, she was chain smoking in the background. Do you remember?
Oh, yes. Man, I don't remember. Until you bring this up, I would never have been able to tell the story.
Because we were about to sing Can You Feel the Love Tonight or whatever it was.
A theatrical hit.
theatrical here from across the day. And yeah, and she was just like happily, like for inches away. And we were all just like, are you, what's happening? What are you doing? We can't breathe anyway.
This is Greece.
Yeah, it was, this is Greece. Yeah. So I want to ask you, because I've just done this, I just finished this job, which I loved. Well, Che in Evita, which is something that we share. What did you make of, did you love that part?
It was probably my favorite experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I did, we did it out in Japan, Hal Prince's 40th anniversary production.
Yeah.
His right-hand man, well, Hal, may rest in peace.
Yeah.
Daniel Kuttner put it on. It's just a phenomenal, it was one of those experiences where I flew thinking I knew the piece, thinking I knew what I was going to get from it, and it was turned on its head.
It's exactly what I left feeling.
And how more, maybe more relevant it is now.
Than ever, yeah. I found there were so many similarities with various things, with her story. Like, I didn't know, I knew this, like, and the money kept rolling in. I knew the tune. I didn't know the words. I'd done Oh What a Circus a bit.
Mm.
But the rest of it, I didn't know at all.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So when I was just offered this, I was like, oh, that sounds like fun. Cool. Yeah, I'll do that. Then I listened to it more and I was like, holy shit, this is amazing. And then, of course, I did it with this massive orchestra and this rock band plus orchestra. There was like 50 in the choir backing all up. Oh, it was insane.
In Reykjavik.
In Reykjavik, a place called the Harper in Reykjavik, which is one of the most amazing concert halls I've ever been to.
Again, I saw it on your Twitter. I was blown away.
Oh, my God.
What did that seat?
It was like 1,600. It looks much bigger.
Sold out?
So yeah, it sold out. We did. They weren't. Well, this is great. What I felt great about this, not for me, but just for they're trying to really promote theater out there. They're trying to get things on much more, and matinees aren't a thing for them at all.
I want to go to Reykjavik and work.
However,
no matinees.
Yeah, no. But this is the point. So we were supposed to do Friday night, Saturday night. There was a potential to do Saturday afternoon if it went well, and they were like, but I wouldn't worry too much about that because no one comes to matinees. The matinee was sold out.
Wow.
Yeah. So potentially this may be something that we can go and do again, which would be amazing because I'd love to go do that again. But what an experience, man. I mean, that's just like that's the way I love to sing. It's the kind of like – that's the kind of character I like to play.
Yeah.
You know, it was just that.
It's so malleable. And depending on the direction, of course, there's so many ways it would be.
Yeah.
Depending on how the director wants to tell that story.
Yeah.
But Che just weaves in.
Oh, out. It's just like such a dream. So,
yeah, super fun with it.
It was great fun, yeah.
Did you love doing Rainbow Tour?
I loved Rainbow Tour. In fact, yeah, I think Rainbow Tour was one of my, it was probably the, I don't know, man. I kind of went from, the money kept rolling in was probably my favorite because we did this little thing in rehearsals. And I was just like, because of course it's like verse, you know.
Yeah, but the chorus just slightly changes every now and then. It's like, which is it?
Exactly. Which word is it? But I remember the director in that rehearsal was like, he said, I can just see you want to unleash a bit, don't you? And I said, yeah, I really do. He said, what do you want to do? Just do whatever you want. I was like, great. I said, well, look, I said for the second verse, like, I'd like to do the first verse, just telling people and establishing. I said, the second one, I just sit on the lip of the stage and talk to the front row. I'd like to do that. And then I said, I'd like to get up, get a false sense of security. Then I'd like to run out into the audience and scare the shit out of them. And I'd like to have money thrown from the tops, from these buckets at the top of the, you know, above the theater, you know, so they rain down on them and stuff. And I would go out there and I would hand money and throw money in their faces and just kind of get in amongst them, because they just, that's not what they're used to out there. You know, they were like, this guy's crazy.
Bunch of facial paper cuts and all that, but still they got the point.
Yeah. The lawsuit is massive, but my God, we have some fun.
No news. Yeah. All news is good news.
Exactly. No, but it was such a great, I mean, I loved that so much. And I guess getting to do it in a, it was like a semi-staged concert. So it was really focused on the music of it. But because everyone kind of came prepared, we got to tell the story properly as well. We got to do it, and we got to perform that. So that it came with, we had great big projections on the back as well. And so we were kind of, it was awesome, man.
So what is it, a new production company?
No, they put on things like this. So I think last year they did like a Les Mis where it was, they're starting to do things like that. And I think they were doing a Phantom, or they were looking into doing Phantom or something. And of course then Evita came up, they've done a JCS. So they're great people to work with, because they love it.
Isn't that great? You just want to work with passion. You want to work with people who are hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great to see that happen in a lot of places that...
the place that aren't used to it, like or haven't been used to it. And I think they're opening themselves up to a lot more of that now, which is great, because
Do you think Hollywood has a bit to do with that, with all these movie musicals that's getting people
excited
about, you know, musicals?
I think so, yeah. I think making them more accessible... And putting them on. So like you say, I mean, these great movies are coming out now, which, you know, things like Greatest Showman or things like that, which people are kind of going, oh, people that maybe weren't into musicals are going, oh, actually that's kind of cool. What should we go and see?
Yeah. That's why, you know, I sometimes see people rag on the casting of these Hollywood films, and I know it'd be great to see colleagues in there.
Yeah.
At the same time, I'm like, those films wouldn't be made otherwise.
Yeah.
If they're getting made and it's making people get turned on to musicals, and then even like a good percentage of them, it translating to actual West End ticket sales, Broadway sales, going to Iceland now, obviously what I do in Japan.
Exactly.
You know, all that's positive.
Yeah, of course it is. You know, I think there was also, I mean, if for example, you have things like now, so, I mean, I guess the one that got a lot of people excited back in the day was Moulin Rouge. Mm. You know, I remember that was around, I mean, like 18, 19 years ago, that film. You know, and now it's,
holy
now
crap.
It's, yeah, like.
How old am I?
Old father time.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and that's now been made into a show over in Broadway, which is doing really, really well. You know, and I think if they were to bring, and like the Greatest Showman over, I'm sure that would obviously have like a great life now, because anyway, but all these things, it can only help. And if it help people kind of getting in into the doors of theatre and coming to see it, then it's all a good, it's all for a good reason, isn't it?
So besides making your new purchase a home and getting everything sorted, what's on the cards in the future?
Well, I mean, I really enjoyed doing... gigs and concerts and things like that. Like I'm really, really enjoying that at the minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, show, I haven't, like the last show I did, I think we finished, what was it, Jersey Boys, we finished in March. And of course I miss doing shows. I miss the kind of routine of it. And I miss that kind of regularity. I miss that side. But, you know, other avenues open up and there's a new little path now. So I'm doing a lot more gigs. Like I'm singing really varied stuff. Like I'm doing a lot of Queen gigs and I'm doing... Wow. You know, the incognito stuff where I do, there's a lot of opera kind of thrown in and all that stuff. And then, you know, and then of course, like the concerts, like the Iceland, like, so like Evita and things like that, there's a few of those. And I'm really enjoying the kind of variation of that.
And are you going to start thinking about producing?
Yeah. Well, in fact, I was talking with, because a friend of mine, because I wanted to go over to Iceland completely prepared. So I'd learned the entire score before I turned up.
Which I think everyone should do.
Everyone should.
Rehearsals aren't for learning. It's for playing.
Yeah, exactly. And well, that's why we got to the stage we got to, because everyone knew their shit. And it was just like, well, if you're still learning act one by Wednesday and we do this on Friday, this is going to be embarrassing.
Especially for something like Avito or your Les Mis's and JC's. Yeah. I'm like, there's enough resources out there.
Exactly. You can find, like, I mean, it's lucky. I mean, it was, we kind of did the, I learned off the one that Ricky Martin did, the Broadway, Eleanor Rodger.
Yeah.
You know, who I did Passion with. So it was nice to listen to that. But
she's amazing.
She's awesome.
I saw
you came twice, didn't you? You came to Passion anyway.
I saw you on a Friday night. Mm-hmm. I said, Simon, I'm coming Saturday matinee. I got to bring Mandy.
Yeah.
It was that good.
Yeah.
With David Thaxton.
That's right. That was a great cast. Scarlett Strallen.
Yeah.
Tim Morgan again. Yeah. I started because me and Tim left Phantom a bit early to go do that. Which they luckily let us do. But yeah, so I was learning that. And I think you have the resources. And because you can listen to things and you can learn maybe 60%, but you can't learn it properly just by listening. So anyways, the point was I spoke to an MD friend of mine, Michael Bradley, and I just said, look, dude, if I book a room for like 2-3 days, can we just go and do 6 hours a day and just keep repeat?
Good for you.
And he said, yeah, of course. And so we did that, and then we were having a beer afterwards once, and I was saying, I kind of had this idea about this thing in this place with this show. Like, should we talk about it? And, you know, and then we started to formulate these ideas, and I was like, I could really do that. And it was something I want to talk to you about, actually, which I won't do now.
Okay.
But that was kind of like, well, why can't you do that? What stops you from being able to put something on if you want to put something on?
Do you know how to get the rights and all that? See, I've always thought about producing. Then I find myself going, you don't know what the fuck to do.
Yeah. Well, actually, but getting rights, this is what I found, because when, like, actually getting rights, it can be tricky, but depends. I happen to have a link to this person.
Okay.
A really good link. So that would make it much easier.
Of course.
But I think it's really a case of them going, yeah, okay. Or don't touch my product.
Well, I guess it has also with you, if you have these connections that you know, well, there's a space for it, a theater.
Yeah.
All I need is this. And I guess you're just producing, you're putting the puzzle together, right?
Basically, yeah. You're getting the ducks in a row. That's kind of what you have to do.
For you, man.
Yeah. So that was kind of an idea. Because now, you know, sort of you do various other, you know, sort of concerts, gigs, and it makes you think, well, actually, I'd quite like to do that. And I would like to have these people do that. And I think those are guys who would be really great for that, and it's a great thing, so why not? I don't know, it's all little ideas, but yeah, why not, basically?
Well, I look forward to the day we get to share a stage together.
Yeah, man.
And I got to start wrapping this up because of the next guest, and I feel there's so much more I wanted to talk to you about, especially about character development and whatnot.
Yeah.
But my beautiful wife, Mandy, I said to her, I need to, I feel like I should ask the same sort of two questions if I'm going to keep doing these podcasts.
Yeah.
So, first question,
mm-hmm.
Favorite childhood memory?
Oh, wow. Favorite childhood memory.
First one that comes to your head, because I'm sure there's more than one.
Yeah, there's loads. But my parents took, I had this, when I was a young kid, I had this school called Bike School. And it was just this, I don't know why that's come to my head, but basically we just got to, when it was break time, there were all these bikes all around the side of the school, and we all just got to play on bikes. And it was, that was part of our thing. And I'd never known that before. It was the only school that kind of did that. They
amazing.
All had, yeah. So bike school was always quite a fond memory for me.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Second question, and this one Mandy got into my head.
Mm-hmm.
What made you smile yesterday?
Well, knowing I was coming to see you, man.
Come on. Well, you know what? It made me smile.
Yeah, no, but it genuinely did, because it was the first time we were going to hook up for a long time. So yeah, I was like, oh, this is awesome. I'm going to get to my buddy.
I love you, Simon.
Love you, man.
Thanks for the hang.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks for listening, folks, to my hang with the brilliant Simon Bailey. I'm really grateful I had the chance to hang with Simon, and I'm fortunate to call him friend. It's been far too long, but I'm glad we had this opportunity. Don't forget, you can connect with me at bpn.fm/thehang and on Instagram and Twitter at Ramin Karimloo. The Hang is produced by Dory Beristein and Alan Seals from the Broadway Podcast Network. You can find me online at bpn.fm/thehang. Don't forget, you can connect with me on Instagram and Twitter at Ramin Karimloo, on YouTube, a Roaming Iranian, or my Facebook page, Official Ramin Karimloo. Music for my podcast is by my friends and one of my favorite bands, The Dives. Please check them out at their website, thedivesmusic.com. That's thedivesmusic.com, where you can get to know them,
hear their incredible music, get links to all their socials, and most importantly, their tour dates, where you can find out where you can see and hear them live. They are truly a great band, and they are phenomenal live. Check them out.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah. Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.